Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 24, Brakes, the How and Why of Stopping. The very earliest of cars, so we're talking about the early 1900s up to about 1920, the brakes were operated by cable. So in other words, they were mechanically applied. So typically the vehicle had some kind of a hand lever, possibly a foot pedal. But the bottom line is there was a mechanical connection between either the hand lever or the brake pedal, so that when you applied the brakes, they were done via cable or some kind of a mechanical linkage. That's just where technology was way back then. It was pretty simple. The downside with cable-operated brakes is, number one, it's very hard, if not impossible, for the human being to apply enough leverage force to actually make the brakes work very well. The other issue is that in foul weather, i.e. Ice buildup, salt, so on and so forth, the mechanical mechanisms, the levers and the cables and things like that, could potentially freeze up, rust, corrode, and so essentially it certainly could affect the operation of the brakes to where you might even lose your brakes. And like I say, the biggest issue really is that because there was no amplification or multiplication type of effect, it was all up to the human being to apply enough force to actually stop the car. Of course, the other side of that is the maximum speed of these cars was maybe 20 or 25 miles an hour, so it wasn't as big of an issue. The very first four-wheel hydraulic brake system that was produced was in 1921 on the Model A Duesenberg. Okay, just real quick, hydraulic theory is basically any fluid that's within a closed area or a closed container. If it's pressurized, it can't be compressed. Okay, it's not like air where you can compress it and make it force a certain amount of air into a smaller area by using pressure. Fluid, in this case brake fluid, but any fluid, when you try to compress it within a closed area, it might as well be a solid hunk of steel. Okay, it cannot be compressed. And so hydraulic theory is that by applying a force to an enclosed area that has fluid in it, that force now goes throughout wherever these different brake lines go in this case. That same force is distributed evenly throughout the hydraulic system, and of course it can be used to, in this case, apply brakes, whether it be wheel cylinders, brake caliper, pistons, so on and so forth. It's the same theory that allows anything that works hydraulically, whether it be, you know, big construction equipment or things that are lifting something or pushing something or pulling something. It's all under hydraulic theory, okay? And again, the brake master cylinder is a perfect example of that. When you press the brake pedal, you're typically in a hydraulic system, you're applying pressure to the master cylinder push rod, which starts to try to pressurize the fluid within the master cylinder, and that's where the force is then applied throughout the hydraulic system and the brakes are applied. In this particular case, there's also a multiplication factor through what's called the brake booster. In most car, that is a vacuum-operated device that essentially what it does is it takes whatever effort you're applying through the brake pedal and it multiplies it through a vacuum diaphragm type of a situation to where the actual pressure that's being applied to the master cylinder is more than what you're capable of applying with your foot. Okay, so there is a multiplication factor there. On older cars, we had what was called drum brakes. The typical components were the brake drums, the shoes. You had what was called wheel cylinders. And on newer cars, for a while, around about the 60s to early 70s, especially with BMW, they started converting to front disc and rear drum type systems. And then eventually they went to four-wheel disc, which disc brakes are much more inherently, they're more powerful, they work better, they will stop a car quicker from higher speeds. There's definitely some advantages with disc brakes versus drum brakes. But like I say, the initial components of a drum system is the brake drums, the shoes, and the wheel cylinders. In disc brakes, you have disc pads, or brake pads, I should say, the rotors, or what's also called discs, the calipers, and typically some kind of pad sensor. Okay. The way the brakes actually work is you're essentially transferring or changing movement or motion through friction to heat. That's essentially what you're doing. When you apply the brakes, you know, the brake pad itself, there's a friction material on there that's designed to where, whether it be brake, drum type brakes or disc type of brakes, either one of those, whether it be the brake shoes or the brake pads, there's a friction material on there. So when you apply the brakes, that friction material now rubs against either the drum in drum brake systems or the disc or rotor in disc brake systems. That friction creates heat, which is given off to the environment, to the outside air. So the kind of funny part about it is that, I mean, a gasoline-powered car is essentially taking fuel and air, and by burning it, it's creating heat, which an engine is basically a heat pump, okay? So you're on one end of the car, so to speak, you're producing heat to propel the car, but when you apply the brakes, you're now converting that motion of the car moving back to heat, which is given back off to the environment. Kind of interesting how that goes around. And I'm going to talk about regenerative braking here in a bit, as far as on typically on either hybrid or electric cars, but that's another, I'll talk about that in a moment here. Of course, on newer cars, we have different brake safety systems. There's ABS, DSC, there's different traction control systems. The list kind of goes on from there. I mean, there's, dynamic braking control. There's, again, there's a number of different systems. The ABS, DSC systems consist of speed sensors. There's some kind of control unit. There's a hydraulic pump or pumps. There's solenoid valves, regulator valves. What ABS and DSC actually does, ABS has a capability when it starts to, by using these different wheel speed sensors, and some cars have one sensor on each front wheel and just one sensor on just the rear differential, so it's looking at both of the rear wheel speed at one time. The better systems, and this would be true of certainly most cars today, have four wheel speed sensors. Okay, so there's a wheel speed sensor at each wheel. And what this is doing, it's converting the movement or the motion of the wheel into an electrical signal that's sent to the control unit. And so when you apply the brakes, if you're either applying them extremely hard or you're in some sort of adverse, climate situation, rain, snow, ice, whatever the case may be, it's looking at, it sees that there's also a sensor on the brake pedal. So it sees that you're applying the brakes. It sees that the car is slowing down. And what it's looking for is essentially wheel lockup on any one or more wheels. So in other words, what you don't want to have happen is where a tire wheel combination actually locks up when you're trying to, as you're braking. Okay. The issue in the past, of course, has always been that typically, excuse me, because of weight transfer and braking, a lot of the braking load is transferred to the front wheels. Well, if you're in some kind of an emergency stop type situation and one or both of the front wheels lock up, because that's also for steering, typically, when a tire is no longer rotating, it can no longer steer the car per se. So in other words, when you input a left or right-hand turn, for that to actually be accomplished, those tires have to be actually rolling, okay? If they stop rolling, in other words, if you're in a wheel lockup situation because of high braking effort, that tire is no longer rolling, so therefore the car, you cannot steer the car. The car will continue on in its original direction before the tires started locking up. So in an extreme adverse braking situation, you could turn that steering wheel any way you want to, and the car is going to continue in the same direction it was going when the wheels locked up. So you have what's called no directional stability. You can't control the car. What ABS does is it senses wheel lockup, And so it starts to modulate or change the pressure going to each individual wheel to where it wants to see. In other words, it starts to either hold the pressure. It wants to see if the wheel's rotating. If it is, then it keeps that same pressure. And if the wheel is still rotating, it will start to raise the pressure up. And again, you're the one by applying the brake pedal that's causing this pressure in the first place. You're creating it by your effort and your pressure on pushing the brake pedal. Okay, so you're creating the pressure in the first place. And again, this is on ABS system only that we're talking about. So the system looks at wheel speed rotation. It's looking at speed. It's looking at, is any one of the wheels starting to lock up or is locking up? If it sees wheel lockup, it has the ability to actually release pressure off that individual wheel to allow the wheel to start to turn again. So what happens under an adverse braking situation with ABS is you'll get this, it'll be a very hard, fast vibrating brake pedal, and typically the steering wheel will start to vibrate. Now, when ABS first came out, people were driving under situations where they were essentially getting into what's called ABS modulation. These things were happening. The brake pedal was pulsating, the steering wheel was shaking, and people weren't really educated or informed of, well, this is what will happen when you're under an adverse braking situation. As it's happening, this is normal, okay? So keep on, applying the brake. I mean, you could put your foot through the floor if you wanted to, so to speak, and the system will modulate the brake pressure to where the idea ultimately is to not allow, or it will greatly mitigate wheel lockup, which means the tires are still rotating, which means you can still steer the car. That is the goal of ABS, is to maintain directional stability while applying the brakes as hard as you possibly can. Okay. So the upside to it is that you can potentially, if you react fast enough and you're good enough with driving your car, that you could potentially avoid the accident or the impact or whatever it is you're trying to steer around in the first place. So no accident is better than an accident that you're able to survive it better. Okay. It's considered a active safety item from the standpoint that it's ready to go and it can actually help you avoid an accident. Okay. An airbag system would be considered passive safety because it does nothing to help you avoid the accident. It simply comes into play when the accident's actually happening. Okay, so that's considered a passive safety system. ABS and traction control, those are considered active safety systems. So, ABS is strictly to help you maintain directional stability as far as steering. Now, when we start getting into dynamic braking, dynamic traction control, dynamic stability control, these are more of where it will start to, you can not even necessarily be applying the brake pedal, and the system will generate its own brake pressure, and it will apply it individually, wheel per wheel, as needed. That kind of a system is more of where there's also a yaw rate sensor, there's longitudinal sensors. So it's looking at other forces that are being applied to the vehicle that as you're driving it, these things are happening. And so you could be going along where, let's say you come out of a stop sign type thing and you're making a right turn and it's been raining, there's water on the road, and you basically apply the throttle too hard. So normally in an older style car, the inner rear wheel, assuming this is rear wheel drive, would start to spin, okay, because of differential effect, and you'd lose traction. If you really pushed it too hard, you could have a situation where the rear end actually spins out, okay? In other words, it comes around. If you're making a right-hand turn, the rear end would come around to your left. So you basically put the car into where it's getting out of control of itself, and if you don't know what to do, you lose control of the car, and you spin out. Of course, this is a lot worse if this happens at speed versus starting away from a stop sign. So when these things start to happen potentially, any kind of a traction control system will start to apply brakes individually to where it hopefully stops that situation from happening in the first place. So again, we call them electronic nannies. It's trying to help you to control the car, even though you are doing things that are putting the car into an adverse traction situation. It's trying to help you control the car. So this is all, a lot of this is done through brake systems. So obviously in today's cars, I mean, it was the same in the past really, but in today's cars, it's very important that the brake system is maintained properly. You want to have, if the car is in for like a vehicle check, or certainly if it's in for any kind of brake work, but hopefully the technician is going to do some visual checks. He's going to look over the brake system visually, check the hoses. Is there any corrosion type issues, rust? Is anything starting, are the brake hoses starting to chaff through where they're getting cracks in them? What's the condition, the visual condition of the brake pads or shoes, the calipers, the discs, so on and so forth? If the person sees anything that's questionable at that point, or if they're you know, contemplating, does this car need a brake job, they should be taking measurements of the brake drums. And again, I say brake drums, that's kind of become, you know, not really out there anymore. That's really kind of an older car type thing. So most cars today are four-wheel disc, most of them. So there's going to be measurements that should be taking of the brake rotors. You have what's called a minimum thickness measurement, okay? And also one of the things that can be used from a diagnostic standpoint is what's called disc thickness variation. And that's where the thickness of the rotor is taken in about 8 or 10 different places around the circumference of the rotor, so to speak. In other words, the thickness is checked, and it's actually a very tight tolerance that it needs to be. Also, what's called runout is checked normally. And this is to determine whether or not the brake rotors that are on your car are reusable or not. If they are at or below a minimum thickness, they need to be thrown away. Okay, the manufacturer typically stamps or marks some kind of a minimum thickness specification on the brake rotor. Anything less than that, you throw it away. Now, believe it or not, I've had customers, I work only on BMWs, and I've had a few times in my career where if people have wanted me to put just new pads on top of or on rotors that were already undersized. That's an improper brake job, okay? The least that would happen, potentially, would be the new brakes could get noisy, but you could get to where there's uneven braking. And the bottom line is the manufacturer has said, look, this is the minimum thickness that we can guarantee you're going to have safe brakes. They're going to be okay. They're going to work properly, so on and so forth. You go below that, I mean, there's a reason there's a minimum thickness there. Okay, and I've had people ask me, and I explained to them that's not good, and I'm not going to do it. That would be, it's, there's not necessarily a law against it per se, but that would be extremely unwise to do that. You know, even if whether you're doing the brake work yourself, or certainly if you have a professional to do it, but you know, don't ask someone to do that for you. Potentially, you are putting you, everyone else in your car, and everyone else around you while you're driving your car at risk. Okay, it's not worth it. I realize brakes are expensive. Frankly, the time it's come up is where someone is going to sell the car, so they don't want to put money into it. I understand that, but now they're asking the repair shop to take on liability because they don't want to spend money on a car that they wore the brakes out, by the way. And now it's time to make them right. And they obviously don't want to spend the money, don't have the money, and they have no concern about the next person they're selling the car to. Okay, bottom line. Maybe they're trading it in, but essentially they don't care. Okay, especially, like I say, I've had one person in particular was almost getting to where it was kind of a bit of an argument, so to speak. I mean, it didn't last very long because I just told him, I said, look, I'm not telling you that there won't be a shop that will do that for you, but it's not going to be me. So if that's the way you want to go and only put brake pads on it, then you're finding somebody else to do it, or do it yourself. Okay, I'm not going to take on that kind of liability. So Also, while the brake work is being done, or for that matter, any time wheels are off the car, the wheel bolts or wheel nuts, whichever are holding, whatever hardware is holding the wheel on, need to be hand-torqued back on. The final torquing on them, the tightening, has to be by hand. Anything less than that, especially if we're talking about German cars, we're talking about high-performance cars, but frankly, really any car out there, there is a torque spec for what the wheel bolts or wheel nuts are supposed to be torqued to. That needs to be done properly. If the technician just takes his air impact hammer and just zip, 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 you know, and puts them on that way, or there's what's called torque sticks, neither one of those is even beginning to be accurate, okay? And it can put a stress into the brake rotor where over time, it doesn't happen right away, but over time, the rotor, because it has this stress in it, will start to wear funny. Typically, it will affect the disc thickness, and you will end up with disc thickness variation, which typically on a car either manifests itself as a steering wheel vibration when you apply the brakes and or a brake pedal pulsation. Okay, so it's become very important. I've had cars come in where I did brake work on it, and of course I, you know, before the car left, I did a proper hand wheel bolt torque. The car leaves and they go to their, you know, they go and get tires, or they go to their tire place and they get their free rotation, whatever. And so the guys have the wheels off and they zip them back on with their air gun and they don't properly torque them. And, you know, 2 weeks, a month later, 6 months later, whatever it is, it takes time for this issue to manifest itself. They'll end up with, when they apply the brakes, they'll either have, a steering wheel shake or a brake pedal pulsation. So in their mind, they're thinking, let's see, this happens when I apply my brakes. Brad did my brake work. I'm going back to Brad. When this was first happening, then nobody really knew what was the cause of it. And so, yes, there was times where I would end up doing free brake work after the fact. Well, then once we started realizing that it was because of improper wheel bolt torque, not only did I put a disclaimer on my repair orders and talk to the customer about it, but what happens now, and I will say this is all over time, this has all gotten better. So what I'm talking to you about right now is not as much of an issue as it used to be. I think the industry in general has learned and gotten to where they are properly torquing wheel bolts or nuts back on. But I'm bringing it up because it is still potentially an issue. And, you know, I'm trying to give you advice that from this point on, you may want to check and see, hey, when you guys, you know, do this work, are you going to, is the final torque or the final tightening of my wheels, are it's going to be by hand? I want it done by hand with a torque wrench. That's what you want to be asking for, okay? If they say, well, we use torque sticks, in my book, it's not accurate enough, okay? A torque stick is still being driven by the air impact gun, okay? It's not a proper, accurate way of tightening the wheel bolts or the nuts. So it needs to be, they need to be hand torqued, and you won't have a problem. Because what happens if a customer comes in, either if they're a, you know, current customer and they, you know, if I find out they had wheels, the tires were off for some other reason at another shop, or even if it's a brand new customer, and they tell me, yeah, I had this, you know, I may ask them, well, did you have tires off in the last, you know, whatever, months or whatever? I take a car on a road test. I verify the complaint. I bring it in. And the first thing I do before the car ever goes up in the air is I check wheel bolt torque and I document it. And invariably what I will find is that either it's way too high, or this is where it's even worse, it's totally uneven between the wheel bolts on any one wheel. So this is where that stress comes into play, okay? BMW, the two wheel bolts torque specs on a BMW is either 88 foot-pounds or 103 foot-pounds, depending upon the size of the lug bolt, okay? It's one of those two. That's it. That's all there is to it. If it's anything other than that, I mean, if it's close, that's fine. But, I mean, I've seen them on the same wheel where one lug bolt will be 150 and another one will be 80 and another one will be 130 and another one's 120. That's putting a stress into the rotor. And invariably that car is in because of some kind of a steering. Typically on a BMW, manifests itself as a steering wheel shake. Okay, when you apply the brakes, you'll get a steering wheel shake. That's if the issue is in the front brake discs. If it's in the rear, you'll get this kind of a weird seat of the pants kind of a vibration, and the brake pedal may have a light pulsation to it. It won't affect the steering wheel at all because the rear brakes are in the rear and they're not connected to the steering system. So another thing that's really important on brake systems in general is having a brake fluid change done. BMW, the Germans are real big on this. The Europeans are real big on this. Regardless of what brand of car you have, this is applicable to any car. I would think that if you were to actually check your owner's manual, that regardless of the car you have, probably somewhere in there, there is a recommendation of changing the brake fluid. I could be wrong about that. Like I say, the Europeans are very big on it. I think the domestics and the Asian cars are getting better about it, but they all use basically the same brake fluid. It's either .3 or .4 specification, okay? It needs to be changed out. It is a preventative maintenance item. If you really want to know more information about it, I would check out episode number 4, Brake Fluid Changes, Why Are They Needed? Okay, I go a lot more in-depth into it, so right now I'm just going to kind of gloss over it. But brake fluid absorbs water, which creates a potential for rust in the system, and it also lowers the boiling point of the brake fluid. So if you want to, you know, get more information about that, check out episode number 4. But for right now, that is a, you know, I'm just bringing it up because it is a preventative maintenance item. The future of brakes, potentially they're going to become electrically operated. There's not going to be a hydraulic system that connects between the brake pedal or the brake input device that you're pressing on and where the actual brakes are applied. Okay. It's going to become electrically operated. The advantages to that so far are so supposedly, there's no actual system in production yet. They are still under testing, but they're talking about it coming out. In theory, there's going to be a shorter reaction time. Okay, because when you apply the brake and it's electrically operated, that movement or that the effect of the actual brakes being applied can happen quicker versus you having to pressurize a hydraulic system by the action of your foot and going through the hydraulic system. So in theory and supposedly in practice, there'll be a shorter reaction time. There's no hydraulic system in the car, okay? The only hydraulics are being used at each wheel. There is still a hydraulic system that's physically applying the brake pads in this case, but that hydraulic system is driven by a small pump at each wheel, so it's electrically actuated. Okay. So in theory, you're going to have lower maintenance costs because, again, there's no hydraulic brake fluid that has to be changed, so you don't have that service. It means there's no hydraulic brake lines in the car in regards to the brake system. However, you're going to have a higher initial cost of the vehicle, and the repair costs may be higher. Again, we don't know yet because the brakes, you know, that system is not in production out there in the real world. But based on, you know, some reading I've done and some research I've done on it, that's one of the possibilities is that brake work will be more expensive. But again, you know, there are some advantages to it. And again, I want to get back to, you know, what are brakes actually doing? And again, it's changing, in this case, motion through friction to heat. Okay. The thing that's kind of interesting, I'm sorry. I want to talk about real quick about regenerative brakes. Again, these are going to be on typically on your hybrids. It's regenerative braking is only in effect on a car that has either it's a purely electric vehicle or it's a hybrid where the wheels themselves are actually driven by electric motors. So what happens on regenerative braking is there's no actual brake system per se. There's nothing from a friction standpoint. There's no heat being generated. What happens is when you apply the brakes on a regenerative brake system, it turns the drive motor that was until just a second ago being used to drive the car or, you know, drive the wheel, so the car to move, it turns that motor into a generator, okay, which requires a load to drive the generator. The generator creates voltage, which is now fed back into the battery. And again, if this is a hybrid or pure electric car, of course, it's got a battery system in it. So what's happening is that instead of losing that heat through friction on a normal brake system, so whatever power it took you to get up to speed, you're now losing it to the environment through heat loss to slow the car down. Regenerative braking uses the motion that was, you know, that you have in the car moving to turn the drive motor into a generator, which is now being driven by the wheel on the ground rotating. That generator requires a load to turn it to create the voltage to be fed back into the battery. Okay. So essentially, in theory, it's going round and round. Okay. The issue, of course, whether it be a gasoline car or for that matter, even an electric car, is there's no perpetual motion, especially on a electric car. Unfortunately, it takes more energy to propel the car than what the car produces by slowing down, if we're talking about an electric car type vehicle. If it was a net sun game, in other words, if it took as much power to propel the car as what it did to slow down, then in theory, you could have a perpetual motion vehicle, assuming that you were accelerating and stopping the same distances as you drove the car. Okay. That's not going to happen. But regenerative braking is a good thing in that it basically recaptures some of the energy that was used to get the car up to speed in the first place. Okay. The goofy thing about brakes in general, and again, let's talk about hydraulic brakes, is that brakes themselves actually produce more horsepower than the engine does. Okay. It's interesting in talking with people sometimes, they're like, what? What do you mean? Well, you know, if you look into any performance magazine or any magazine that's doing a review about a car, there's typically somewhere in there where they'll have two different things. They'll have an acceleration test in a quarter mile where they're going, well, it's not necessarily a quarter mile. They time how long does it take to go from 0 to 60 in seconds, okay? Most cars certainly will get up well over 60 miles an hour in a quarter of a mile. They'll do quarter mile acceleration tests, okay? A quarter of a mile is 1,320 feet, okay? But they'll show 0 to 60 times, and they'll measure it in seconds. So also somewhere in that review, they will show braking performance. Braking performance is measured in feet by how long did it take you, I should say how far did it take you, to stop from 60 to 0. Okay, how many feet did it take you to stop from 60 to 0 miles an hour? A decent car, and especially a BMW or European car, your higher performance cars, will typically go from 60 to 0 in somewhere around about 130 to 150 feet. Okay, you can be rest assured it takes you a lot further than that to go from 0 to 60. Okay, that feet mark or foot mark is going to vary from car to car, obviously, and some cars are going to get there pretty quickly from how many feet they take up to go from 0 to 60. But if you were to measure those two things, how many feet did it take to go from 0 to 60, and how many feet did it take to go from 60 to 0, you can be rest assured the brakes produce more horsepower than the engine does, because it will take typically less distance to go from 60 to 0 than from 0 to 60, okay? So not to get unfeeling or morbid or anything, but the whole situation when we see in the news where there's unintended acceleration and so on and so forth, sorry, but the brakes produce more horsepower than the engine does, okay? Especially if we're talking about these different things happening from a standing stop where for a while there, you know, people were going through their garage door right out through the back of their garage and so on and so forth, and they swore that they were stepping on the throttle. Excuse me. They were stepping on the brake pedal and the car just lurched forward and they couldn't control it. Not going to happen. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. This is why a lot of cars eventually started getting what's called park lock, control. If it's an automatic transmission, you have to put your foot on the brake to be able to put it into gear, reverse, neutral, drive, whatever the case may be. This was the manufacturer's response in trying to get away from, you know, unintended acceleration, where people would put it into gear and not have their foot on the brake when they do it. And next thing they know, they're, you know, they think their foot is on the brake and it's on the throttle, and they put it in gear and away you go. So like I say, brakes produce more horsepower than the engine does. So, that's about it for brakes. Hopefully it's kind of, enlightened you about, how the brake system works and kind of the history of it. You know, again, proper maintenance is very important. Wheel bolt torque is really important. Okay. Having the brake fluid changed is important. There's been a lot of, you know, advancements in brake systems and traction control systems, and this is all stuff that supposedly and hopefully helps you in the control of your car. I hope at some point maybe you take your owner's manual and read it, because it'll give you a lot more information about these different systems. But, you know, again, hopefully this podcast is just giving you some basic outlines and things to look for and things to ask for when you're getting your car repaired. So I hope you found it interesting and informative and increases your understanding of your car. And as usual, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. And please, wherever you got this podcast from, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, whatever the case may be, you know, please, if you have any comments or anything, good or bad, I'll certainly read and respond to any of them. You know, let me know. And if there's maybe a subject I haven't covered yet, you know, by all means, again, let me know. And I will, if I need to do research to put together a podcast, I will definitely do that. Appreciate your time. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you, and thank you again.